Hey everyone, welcome to Handing the Shame Back. We're at part two with Tess Gonzalez, all the way from North Dakota, and she is a Christian. She's a survivor, she's an advocate, and she has shared with us in part one everything that happened to her. I highly recommend you go back and watch it. But just before we launch into part two, there's a trigger warning as always with this. So I think it's really important if you start to feel a bit upset or you start to feel triggered, please do stop watching. Go to the show notes below and get some resource and support. Don't worry about ever not seeing the video. It will always be up on the channel. We don't tend to take them down. Welcome back to you, Tess.
Thank you.
So look, we're at part two. We're looking at what you are doing now and perhaps what helped you overcome what your history had provided you. So tell us a little bit about Tess at this point in your life, I guess, and leading up to this part of the healing for you.
Sure. So I would like to definitely share that from the point that I started recognizing and acknowledging the abuse, I was 19. So at that time, I was in a facility. I had spent quite a few years in different treatment facilities just to be okay. And it is hard to talk about, but I like to also advocate and share about mental health because a lot of those conditions, they're all stemming from trauma. And so after that point, once I started recognizing that and working on that, I got my first apartment at 20, which I am so proud of. I'm still living here. And, there was the fear that because of my trauma and mental health issues, I wouldn't even be able to successfully live on my own. So it was very scary, but here I am, and I'm thriving in that sense. Very proud of that. So I haven't, unfortunately, been able to work. That's been one that I try to have grace for myself for and not look at it as a successful versus unsuccessful kind of thing, because my brother, he's the kind who, because he works, he likes to shame the fact that I don't. So, but what I've been doing is surviving, and I'm so proud of that. I'm still here. And I also, through this time, have been looking towards doing service work. I love to volunteer. I love to work primarily in nursing homes. So that was awesome because of my grandmother. And I got involved with some church activities in the past. And currently I'm also doing a lot of online groups, SIA, Survivor of Incest Anonymous. And they have been so powerful in helping my healing journey. If it was last year, there's no way I think I'd be able to handle that. So I can tell that I'm a lot stronger than I used to be. And feeling that validation and hearing that I'm not alone, that there are a lot of people like me who've also been abused by a mother or brother, it is so comforting, though I wish nobody had to relate. But it's comforting in knowing that I didn't go through this alone and that people can validate that. So yeah, that's where it's been at. Just really working even harder on my healing. I don't want to be in my 40s still needing to heal.
So look, I'm just going to pull you up on something. You're going to love me by the end of this. And for our survivors, sure. Watching. There is no one place or one road we should follow in the healing, yes, and recovery as survivors. We all end up where we need to be. And how do you know that? Because that's where you are. If you're unable to work, that's fine. because you're still able to do what is nurturing for you, which is acts of service. You're still able to give to yourself in terms of your self-care and your healing, which wouldn't have happened had you been trying to work as well. So I think it's time to reframe sometimes the self-talk we use, or the talk that comes from outside of us, as in a brother who, by the way, abused you. So I don't, that's just white noise. Switch that voice off. Because anything that lifts you should be where you are going. And the reality is you weren't meant to be working. And how do I know that? Because you haven't been. So just trust yourself and honor who you are. And to you wonderful survivors watching, the same for you. There is this ridiculous thing called comparative suffering, and I've brought it up on the show before. There is no better, there is no worse, there is no that person should be doing more of this or less of that. We know that healing is unique for us, and what we all went through is individuals. So Tess, any self-talk from now on needs to be affirming and honoring of you.
Thank you.
So lecture over.
Thank you, though. I needed that.
Yeah. The serving is something, and Tess, you and I talked about this earlier, the serving is something that is so powerful. Can you tell us what led you to that? I know you have beautiful love of your amazing grandmother, but what led you to it initially, do you think?
Sure. So I have, for some reason, ever since I was very, very young, I had such a heart and compassion for people. I loved to help others. I don't know when it started. I always love to associate with others and to chat with others and to bring a smile to people's faces. And so when I was about 12, I was in this program called Helping Hands. And I think it was from like ages 8 to like 17. So it was a wide range, and they would kind of like take your interests, and then they would place you in a different area. And mine, of course, happened to be nursing homes. And so that was such a wonderful first experience for me. There were some moments that were a little scary because I hadn't yet experienced and seen what it's like for an aging person like that. But I took away so much from it. It was wonderful. And since then, I have tried to get involved again now as an adult. And I do have the opportunity now with a place. I even have a little badge with my name on it, so I can go at any time. And it is so fulfilling, so rewarding. Yeah.
It's so lovely. Well, you be proud of that badge, Tess. You be proud of that badge. Interesting, isn't it? Because I think as well, you know, Tess, you and I talked earlier about how there is a belief, isn't there, out there generally that that when there's someone giving and someone receiving, the person receiving gets more in terms of amazing feelings. But the reality is, research shows us it's the person doing the giving that feels more, because in the act of giving, you're expanding, you're able to honor and offer. So well done, you. And for survivors, that's one of the key components I talk about in the book, is actually service is a very big thing for survivors, and it really helps lift us on those days, and Tess can attest to, I'm sure, when we're perhaps not feeling quite as good as we'd like to. actually finding someone to serve or finding something to serve can be useful. So
Yes.
Tish, you also you go to Survivor, you've got online Survivor groups that you love, getting a
Yep.
lot from. Yeah. So
Very much so.
what has helped you? I'm just thinking about our Survivor community and what they're doing, and as they're watching this, what any tips you might give to our survivors in terms of your what you would recommend to others who might be.
I not everybody shares a belief in God, so I'm not gonna recommend that. But what I will recommend is being sure that you try if you can, because I know it's so hard when you're feeling in the darkest depths of despair, is to try and self-care as much as you can. That is a big part of what has gotten me through, aside from my faith. Just trying to get out of bed, trying to eat, trying to, I distract a lot so that I don't know if it's so I don't disassociate or I don't have the constant thoughts. And I try to have grace for that, not thinking and comparing and like, oh, I'm doing nothing. No, it is my mode of self-care at that time. And there can be so many things, whether it's hobbies or anything you can focus on that helps you feel good. Nothing that hurts you, nothing that hurts somebody else, but whether it's reading or coloring or listening to music, I have a whole hoard of things I love to do. And I've always made a joke about I have a zest for life in spite of everything. And there's so many activities that I love to do, even if my motivation is little to none. And I think that is probably the highest thing I could recommend, just trying to take care of yourself as best you can and finding things you enjoy for sure. Because it brings that happiness, even if it's fleeting, it makes you feel good. And the service, like you had mentioned and I had mentioned, it's rewarding when you can do that for somebody else, for sure.
That's amazing. And you can see that spark in you. And I'm so pleased that has not gone out. It's
Thanks.
amazing. That's amazing. And, you know, Tess, as you're sitting here and we're looking at all of this, and I'm thinking, you know, you would have done some trials and tribulations as you found your way through. Do you
Yep.
have people that you find are more able to hear your story or able to support you than others? And if so, how did you find that? How did you know that or sense that?
Yes, so that's an excellent question. I most of my life I have had to heal alone. And it has been very tragic because when I've tried to open up to most people, they could not handle even an ounce of my story because it is so malignant, so sadistic. And even friends that I made in my previous church, they could not handle over time just that I was always stuck in the darkness. I didn't really have anybody to help pull me out, and they didn't want to even hardly check on me, even though they could see on my Facebook, like, help, I'm drowning, So that really sucked. That face-to-face people, I don't have many of in my life. I do have one friend currently, and she is very grandmotherly, but I think her too, she can only handle so much, as is the case with most people who have not gone through the extent of trauma that me and other survivors have. So finding these online groups, and I 100% encourage people as well to seek out more resources and groups like this, because it has been another saving grace for me. I have found my people, even if it's long distance. I feel that connection that I've been longing for and searching for, the validation when my whole life I've been invalidated, even unintentionally, by people that, said were my friends. So I can't recommend that enough, those support groups.
That's amazing. And it is that sense of community. But equally, I think the support groups are the ones, because you don't have to explain anything really. Survivors get it. And I think that's that's the value of it. That's the gift of it. And I think sometimes too, and as survivors watching have experienced as well, there's this thing that happens when we start to tell our stories, and it's called cognitive dissonance. And our mind, the mind of the person we're talking to, does not ascribe to what we're saying, not out of intent or deliberately trying to undermine, more out of that is so horrible and evil. My ethics and values don't align with it. So therefore I have to push it away. I can't accept it. So sometimes understanding that, Tess, and survivors watching can help us, because it's not that these are bad people. It's just sometimes they do not have an ounce of understanding because they can't even comprehend it. So having those survivor groups or someone you can go to. And I don't think any of us are surprised that the first person you found was a grandmotherly figure.
It was funny how that worked out. So, yeah.
So anything else you'd like to share with us as we're coming into the last few minutes of the interview?
Sure. I think definitely trying to find your people, and holding on tight. With me also relating so much to the mental health aspect that comes with trauma, reach out as much as you can, because I would hate to not say, just let go. And I know that I personally have contemplated going, leaving.
Yeah.
And I think it's so important that other survivors do everything they can to hold on, because it does get better. It takes time, but I can for myself say that I have survived, and I know we all can. So I hope they can take something from that as well.
Yeah, no, that's lovely, and it's so true. And unfortunately, that sort of thinking about not being here or ending it all is not uncommon. It's very common among a survivor community. I'm very pleased that you are still with us, Tess, and that you chose to carry on the way that you have. So, Tess, stay there. We're going to close out with the audience, but audience, there's so many little nuggets here. You owe me big time, don't you? Jokes. No. And how, really great that we have people like Tess on the show, because it shows us just every survivor's journey is their own, and where they end up is where they're meant to, and the help arrives when we're ready to deal. And I think that's important too. But she said many things, and one of the things I just want to come back to was she talked about on those days when it's hard to get out of bed, when it's hard to eat. She used a lovely term. She said she tries to have grace for that, and I just want you guys to hold on to that, because I think that's really powerful. Having grace for yourselves and being kind to you is the most important thing you can ever do in your recovery and healing. So as always, lovely ones, I see you, I stand beside you, and I believe you.